In September, scientists in Laos discovered the closest known relative to the human SARS-CoV-2 virus, adding another branch to the coronavirus's rapidly growing family tree. Yet, despite this latest discovery, we're still some way away from being able to retrace the virus's evolutionary journey from its animal origin to its pandemic version today. I'm Nicole Lim, and in this episode of Medicus the Podcast, we find out what it takes to hunt for the very viruses that may cause the next pandemic. It is dusk, and I'm out for a stroll in the landscaped garden that connects the three towers in my condo. The trees' long shadows dissolve into twilight, and puddles of light illuminate the garden path. As the darkness falls, and it falls fast in the tropics, I notice black shapes flashing under the lights, chattering and swooping as they forage for insects. They dart around the night sky, dropping suddenly to skim the surface of the swimming pool for another tasty morsel.
The COVID-19 pandemic has emphasized how little we actually know about the virus and bacterial communities harbored by bats and other zoonotic disease reservoirs such as rodents.
That's Dulcie. She's about to defend her PhD thesis on the epidemiology of bud-borne viruses, work that took her and the rest of the virus-hunting team from Duke NUS Medical School in Singapore to many unusual places around the region, like high into the remote mountains of South Asia.
So in order to reach the village, we had to drive over 20 hours on damaged dirt roads and bridges. And the bat cave is located approximately 1.5 hours hike down from the village, and we have to carry all our field equipment and supplies with the help of the villagers down to the mountains, to the bat cave, to set up our sampling station.
That was one of Dulcie's most memorable bat encounters. Also in Dulcie's team is Sophie, a senior research associate who didn't always love bats.
I think when I was younger, I was like, ooh, bats, they're bad. They fly around your hair and they're dangerous.
Since joining the team 8.5 years ago, that has changed. And one particular encounter left her totally amazed.
I was setting up the station at the time and I was like, oh God, please don't start raining. I just looked up and it was the bats suddenly just all emerged from this cave mouth all at one time and just in this kind of winding funnel, and the noise that happens, you look up and you just think it's raining, but it's actually a load of bats just flying out of their cage going off to do their evening foraging. And then, yeah, that was pretty spectacular to witness.
That cave alone is estimated to be home to some 600,000 bats. In their study of bats, one of the key hideouts of viruses and bacteria that can infect humans, Sophie and Dulcie have travelled to many remote locations. But bats live all around us, unless Antarctica is your home. So the team has also had some interesting encounters closer to home that are memorable for other reasons.
I haven't been on that many overseas fieldwork trips as compared to Dulcie and Sophie.
That's Lena. She's a research assistant who recently rejoined the team after first interning with them as a teenager.
The one trip that was really etched into my memory was actually a visit to a bat roost. And the bat roost was found on the expressway in Singapore, and it was crawling and infested with cockroaches.
By studying bats in as many different places as possible, teams like the trio from Duke NUS can determine which bats carry viruses that pose the most imminent threat to humans, and where to find them.
So then we can do further research and help to determine the gene flow and the exchange of infectious diseases among the urban and the wildlife species. And then from there, we will then identify areas of potential spillover into humans, especially at high-risk interfaces, which is guano harvesting, bushmeat hunting, and also live animal market trading.
And it is these places where animals and humans mix that are rife with opportunities for a virus to jump from an infected animal to a human via a small cut on a hand or an innocuous scrape on a bare foot. Each infection, the potential seed for the next pandemic. And such spillovers are surprisingly common.
I'm pretty sure all these spillover events have happened. It's just that it didn't become an epidemic because the virus didn't adapt into the human population and it didn't manage to develop the right mutations that allow it to survive in the host that it infected. So all we can do is actually go to places that we think are high-risk interface.
So for the 3 years before the pandemic erupted, the team regularly travelled to Cambodia to collect bat and small mammal samples from as many different habitats as possible. To make sure that they didn't accidentally get infected with a novel virus while working, the team donned safety gear, even if that meant getting extra sweaty and uncomfortable.
So if we are under a roost where we are exposed to a lot of falling fecal and urine material, we have to be in Tyvek suits.
Imagine the white head-to-toe plastic coveralls you see on CSI shows.
So we don't get things falling on us. If we are doing catch and release,
whoever's handling the bat will wear leather gloves. Whoever's taking the samples will wear latex or nitrile gloves. We'll be wearing safety goggles, N95s, long sleeves, covered-toed shoes. it's pretty hot work with all of this extra PPE on, but it's better to be safe than get bitten or needle stick.
They collected almost 30,000 samples, and now the team is developing a risk map that highlights where the bats with the most dangerous viruses live.
So we've got a project in Laos coming up, so we're hoping to use this model that we've created in Cambodia to be able to predict where we might find certain bat species and viruses in a different country in the same habitat.
But finding out exactly what virus a bat might harbour isn't like diagnosing an infection in humans. Our virus hunters have to be much more tenacious to get a clear read.
So, for example, if you want to look for a specific flu A virus, you use primers that target a specific virus species. But because what we do not know what's out there, we have to use pen family specific primers that target the very conserved region of the viral family. Then from there, we have to chase down the specifics into identifying what exact species it is.
Yeah, the results can sometimes be really obscure and difficult to read.
Sometimes if you sample at different time point, the bats shed virus at different amounts. For example, if they're under stress during the haze, they might shed more.
Dulcy, Sophie and Lena rely on other teams' published work to give them some clues as to what to look out for. But even then, they always have to start by screening for just a simple family resemblance.
Bats have been implicated as reservoirs for rabies, the coronavirus, the 2003 SARS-CoV epidemic, paramyxoviruses such as Nipah and Hendra virus, and filovirus such as Marburg virus. So these are the main family viruses that we tend to look for.
Top of that, we also do look for extraviruses, real viruses, and also influenza viruses, and actually a lot others. And we screen all samples for bacterial species such as Bartonella and Leptospira, but it all really depends on the geographical location of the project.
All in all, they usually screen for 5 to 7 families of viruses and 2 to 5 groups of bacteria.
And to do that, we use a number of different lab techniques, such as PCR, also known as polymerase chain reaction, NGS, known as next generation sequencing, and serological assays. So PCRs and NGS allows us to obtain genetic material to look at the relatedness of the virus we find to known human and animal viruses. This can inform us on the virus potential to spill over into the human population. On the other hand, serological assays allow us to explore an individual's exposure history to antigenically similar viruses.
Once they have a hit on a particular family, say a coronavirus, they have to tunnel down the branches until they get to the specific virus's genome. And if that genome is not yet recorded on the family tree, they get the honour of adding it.
Yeah, it's really rewarding to actually finally get to the end, and then when you make the phylogenetic trees.
Yes, I made a tree.
But good science is only part of what they do. The team also focuses on boosting the capabilities of scientists around the region.
Once we get to the country, we train the in-country people, and so they're capable of doing independent research, which they can then carry on after our project finishes.
Because the more we look, the more we will find, and
the more research you do, the better equipped you are to deal with what's out there and then what can happen from these viruses that are circulating. If you don't know that this virus is here, in this species, in this habitat, you can't do anything.
Can their work predict the next pandemic?
Unfortunately, we are actually not able to predict the next pandemic, but the closest we can actually get to is to estimate and predict the potential of spillover at the high-risk interfaces, and this is exactly what we are trying to do right now with our work.
And all three of them are pretty passionate about their work. So what's the best part of the job?
Travel!
I was going to say that. And like the different aspects. So usually people have jobs that are just like one thing. You sit at a computer or you. But we get to do field work, we get to do lab work, we get to travel at conferences.
Yeah, we don't just like hide in the lab and do the same experiment every day. We follow through the entire pipeline of collecting the samples ourselves, doing the lab work, analysing the data and results, and then sharing this information with the scientific community and public.
And the bats themselves.
When you actually see this little bat in your hand, you're like,
it's so cute!
when they trap bats, and then after they sample them and release the bats, they actually feed them mango juice. Yeah. And they do this little lickety thing like...
Because we interrupt their foraging time, so we have to return them some rewards in return, like, thank you for a donation.
As the bat takes flight, the three virus hunters get ready to return to the lab to scrutinise the contents of their samples, hoping that their work will help us be better prepared for what still lurks out there. To learn more about the work that Sophie, Dulcie and Lena do, or listen to past episodes of the podcast, head to duke-nus.edu.sg/medicus. Thanks to Sophie Borthwick, Dulcie Lowe and Lena Chung. Additional sounds by Jim Rogalski. The music in this podcast is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Nicole Lim, and this is Medicus, the podcast.